through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you're done pairing your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone, all alone. You watched in awe at the red, white, and blue on the 4th of July. While those fireworks were exploding, I was burning that fucker and swinging my black flag high, eating the peanuts that the parties have tossed you in the backseat of your father's new Ford. You believe in the ballot, you believe in reform, you have faith in the elephant and jackass. And to you, solidarity's a four-letter word. We're all hypocrites, but you're a patriot. You thought I was only joking when I screamed kill Whitey at the top of my lungs, at the cops in their cars and the men in their suits. No, I won't take your hand and marry the state. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone, all alone.
Hello and welcome on The Circle Day on Resonance 104.4 FM. Today's show is about the Muck Libel case with Dave Morris. How did it all begin?
Back in the 1980s, I was involved with a group called London Greenpeace, which was an independent Greenpeace group, anarchist group, that had been very active for about 20 years in this country. And we were involved with, in the early 80s, kind of the first anti-capitalist protests and blockades in the City of London. And after, which were reasonably successful, we had about 3,000 people on one of them. And out of that, we started to focus more on corporations rather than kind of lobbying governments or protesting about governments. We started focusing on corporations and what they were really up to in the world. And quite soon, I think about 1985, we decided to campaign against McDonald's because there were a lot of people criticising McDonald's and different movements focusing on their food or working conditions or whatever. And we decided that we would bring it all together in a kind of unified campaign to show the effect that multinationals were happening on our lives, on our communities, on our society, on the world. And the campaign took off, and we produced leaflets that were gobbled up by the public. This was just in London. What we didn't know was that McDonald's were behind the scenes, to us, threatening legal action against all kinds of organisations, trade unions, the BBC, Vegetarian Society, anyone that was criticising them. And then, you know, eventually, they thought they might have problems with us, but eventually they sued us for libel, trying to suppress criticisms that were kind of growing. Basically, we said, well, we're going to fight back. We're going to launch a campaign. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. We launched in they sued us in 1990, and we launched the McLibel support campaign. So that leaflets that were given out in thousands when we were sued by McDonald's, because they were very popular leaflets, but by the end of the campaign, they were being given out in millions all over the world in 27 or 30 languages that we could find out about. So for us, it was a campaign to defend our freedom to protest against multinationals, a campaign of defiance.
What were the real issues involved?
I mean, McDonald's, I mean, kind of, everyone kind of knows some of the basics, but McDonald's was trying to suppress, you know, the reality, but they obviously advertise on a huge scale. They spent at that time about $2 billion every year advertising worldwide. So it was their advertising, especially to children, that we focused and criticised. It was a promotion of their food as nutritious when everyone knows it's junk food. And links between that kind of food, that kind of diet, and serious diseases, heart disease and cancer. Their effect on the environment with their packaging, also cattle ranching, a lot of cattle ranching and soya production for animal feed goes on in rainforests or ex-rainforests. So that was part of the whole criticism. The exploitation of workers, especially young workers, their anti-trade union attitude. I mean, basically, you name it, and whatever McDonald's was doing was bad. So we brought that all together. And we also, once we were sued, we made sure that we incorporated all those movements, trade union activists, nutrition activists, you know, people that are concerned with children's rights and advertising and so on, environmentalists. We brought them in to the whole picture. And so those were the key issues that were part of the court case. And we call witnesses from all over the world. Those movements, really, by us supporting them and them supporting us, we were able to get witnesses, experts, you know, trade union activists from, you know, 10 different countries, and, you know, world-renowned health experts, and so on. And we were able to, really, what we did is we put McDonald's on trial in the courtroom. It was like a tribunal of everything that was wrong with not just McDonald's, but corporations generally. We always made the point that McDonald's was a very high profile corporation, but really everyone was doing the same. So as far as we were concerned, we were putting capitalism on trial, but we had to focus on McDonald's, you know, during the case.
Wow, yeah. Take us through some of the highlights of the battle.
Well, when it started, we didn't have any legal aid, so we had to defend ourselves. We had to represent ourselves. We had to organise all the witnesses. We had to cross-examine McDonald's. McDonald's brought all their big guns into the witness box, board of directors, experts, heads of departments. And so we were cross-examining them ourselves, me and Helen. This is myself and Helen Steele.
Wow.
The case kind of, McDonald's forecast the case would take 3 to 4 weeks. It was the longest case in English legal history. It took 3 years, 313 days in court, which is three times longer than any previous libel case. I mean, for example, I remember one of their witnesses, one of their board of directors, was in the witness box for 9 days. So really, it was two worlds collide. They were there with all their propaganda and their big guns and all their money and their huge legal team of highly paid barristers. And really, it was me and Helen and the support campaign behind and the various movements that we were working with up against them. And the longer it went on, the worse it got for McDonald's, because all the evidence basically supported, you know, our position.
Yeah, basically the truth came out.
The truth came out, and at the same time, some of the evidence that they were coming out with was absolutely ludicrous, laughable, trying to justify, you know, the amount of packaging, because they were saying that there's all these empty gravel pits in the country and some of the packaging can go and fill up those gravel pits, you know, claiming their food was nutritious because it contained water. And water's nutritious. Like Coca-Cola, they were saying, is nutritious because it contains water. So absolute ludicrous stuff. And we were getting this out to the public. In fact, halfway through the trial, a website was set up called McSpotlight. And in those days, there weren't any campaigning websites. You know, this was the beginning days of the internet. But this website kind of got global publicity. We were able to put all the transcripts of the trial onto it. Mm-hmm. And the press all over the world were able to access our press mm-hmm. releases and so on. It got 2 million hits, like in the first week or whatever it was. And so, you know, it really had a big effect. It was the campaign that we launched around the case got global publicity, put McDonald's on the defensive, it burst their bubble, and helped to mobilise, you know, activists all over the world.
Yeah. Can you say more about the nature of the campaigning throughout the case?
Yeah, the McLibel support campaign was about 20, 30 people meeting every week in London. But there were dozens of groups around the UK who were regularly, most importantly, pledging to carry on giving out the leaflets, because McDonald's wanted to stop the leaflets. So our big, angle was like, right, they want to stop us, we're going to make it, you know, everywhere. And so we had days of action, you know, I think at one time during the case, 300 of their stores were picketed and leafleted, which was at half of their stores in the UK. At the very end of the case, we planned to have a really big splash the weekend after the case was finished. Whatever the verdict, we wanted to show that the campaign was now unstoppable. The cat was out of the bag. People were doubly incensed about McDonald's, because not only were they doing all these things with their normal practices, they were also bullies trying to shut people up. So, and there were protests in dozens of countries at the end of the case. The extra good thing was, despite, you know, having no legal aid, and I forgot to mention, we were refused a jury trial, which was a real blow, because the jury probably would have chucked the case out, you know, rather than have to sit through all that nonsense of going trying to prove the obvious. But despite all that, we won some important points. Even the judge, who was really sympathetic to McDonald's, but he had to fine for us on ruling that their advertising exploits children, that their advertising was deceitful in promoting their food as nutritious, that the kind of diet that they are promoting is linked to heart disease.
Cholesterol.
You know, that workers, that it's fair to say they suffer poor pay and conditions, and that McDonald's is anti-trade union. So we won some really important points. And we also won further points at appeal. We didn't win all the points. Some of the points were really hard to prove, because, like rainforest, all the evidence is really over in Brazil. And we only had about 35,000 quid that we'd managed to raise from public donations, but McDonald's spent about £10 million pursuing the case.
Really,
so, you know, so some of it was pretty tough, and it was hard work, you know, but we won further points on appeal, and then we went to the European Court, and we won in 2005 the case at the European Court about the lack of legal aid and the lack of a fair trial. So that really was like the icing on the cake. We could declare total victory, end up with a victory celebration almost 20 years to the day after the original first protest at the Strand in central London. The day of the verdict of the European Court, we were back there, and that got a lot of publicity. So as far as we were concerned, it was, you know, it had come full circle, but the movement against McDonald's was not just McDonald's, but against corporations had grown a lot in those 20 years. And in fact, the whole anti-capitalist movement that grew up around the end of the 90s and the beginning of you know, the last decade, this was an important plank in that, because it was the most well-known anti-corporate global campaign. And then you had the rise of the anti-capitalist movement and blockades of, you know, summits where you had the finance ministers and heads of government, whatever, were meeting to, you know, continue their domination of the planet. So overall, we felt really positive about what we'd achieved.
Wow. What do you think, apart from actually winning the case, what did you achieve? Do you think that you did put off customers, for example? That must have really got up their goat.
Yeah, I mean, it was never a boycott campaign, because we wanted to make it clear. We weren't saying, oh, don't go to McDonald's, but Burger King's fine.
Yeah.
You know, we were criticising all corporations. We wanted to show up what were basically standard practices about processed food and workers' rights and so on. The most important thing we achieved was the growth of the campaign, and not just the anti-McDonald's campaign, but there were aspects to it. Like, there was a group called McDonald's Workers Resistance that began to make contacts, started in Edinburgh, but it made contacts throughout the world, encouraging McDonald's workers to get organised and so on. That local communities were mobilising against new stores, you know, and that we were able to link up at the community level. So I think that's really important. I think also that McDonald's had generated through all their advertising this kind of air of invincibility and kind of, you know, a benevolent kind of, you know, family, you know, organisation. And I think we kind of burst that bubble, that most people knew they were actually a dodgy outfit. They were just a big dodgy outfit. So I think that was achieved. Their profits did struggle after our case, in 2 or 3 years after the case. They've recovered pretty much, I think, since. But don't forget, you know, if you brainwash people enough with advertising and, you know, bombard people with it everywhere you go, then obviously it's going to keep people going to their stores.
What about advice for today? For me, Tesco is a new McDonald's, in terms of growth. So, and there's a lot of campaigns against that, but I mean, just in terms of the corporation side of it, any advice, any kind of...
I think the most important thing is that when we look back, how were we able to do this despite these overwhelming odds? It's me and Helen were both very experienced activists. We'd been involved in community struggles. We were involved in the anti-poll tax movement. We'd supported people in court cases. So we'd had a lot of experience on how to organise, how to present your case, how to, you know, understand how the courts work. And also we were part of movements. So the best, you know, if you like, insurance for the future, if people are concerned about the future or they're getting involved with campaigns, is to get involved. That is the answer, because you build up your awareness, your techniques, you know, your confidence, your contacts with other people. And at the end of the day, it's strong grassroots movements that make the difference. So although the kind of McLibel case in some ways was a bit of a sidetrack from the other kind of movements that we've been involved with and now we're, you know, back involved with in our local community and so on, it benefited from the fact that we were embedded in, you know, opposition movements, and that we were able to get those movements to work together during this case.
I think that that's really the key here. So people should basically have a look around at where they live and look around what goes on there and get stuck in there, really, because that's what we have actual access to, you see, yeah. So,
I mean, me and Helen are both, you know, heavily involved in Tottenham in community activities, always have been, for the last 30 years. And I mean, she's been a union activist, and we're both involved with like residents associations and Friends of Parks groups. I'm heavily involved with trying to regenerate our local park. Also, we're both involved with Haringey Solidarity Group, which is an anarchist group, been going 20 years, came out of the anti-poll tax struggle. And the Haringey Solidarity Group supports a wide range of campaigns and struggles in Haringey. So similar in some ways to what we tried to do with the McLibel campaign, is bring all the issues together and show how they all, you know, that all the pieces of the jigsaw have to be in place to understand the whole picture. And with Haringey Solidarity Group, I think what people need to do is create strong local groups in every part of London and indeed the UK and the world, which support all the various different struggles and groups and campaigns that are needed in local areas.
Mm, yeah. You touched on it before a little bit, but could you say more about, like, what, how I see what you did? Because, I mean, you can't really bombard people with anti-capitalism with straight away if the person's a stranger to it, you see. So, like, this... So, I don't know what I'm trying to... How to put it. Do you know what I'm...
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. basically, yeah. You know, it's not a question of, you know, doing the same as McDonald's, just bombarding people with anti-capitalist messages. You know, I think it's getting people to, well, obviously spreading information, spreading alternative information and ideas is very important. But people learn most through experience. So it's about creating a whole network of active groups that are accessible, that people can get involved with, that are out on the streets and they're doing stalls and they're linking up with other community groups. I mean, Haringey, we've tried really hard to make sure that the Haringey Solidarity Group is part of a much wider picture of community groups and other single issue campaigns or whatever. And every year for two or three years, for about 3 years, we organised something called Haringey Independence Day, which was to bring, you know, dozens of groups together, all different kind of groups, community groups and radical groups and so on, to share their experiences. And at the end of the day, it's by making what we do normal and accessible so that new people can get involved. And that we're linked in with other big struggles and campaigns such as the anti-cuts movement, residents associations, whatever. So what we're doing is normal. Yeah. It's what the authorities are doing that's not normal.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, my train of thought. But so basically, like, there's Radical London. That's a way, if you're in London, to get involved, as in, because we have to kind of be equipped with these kind of, like, the ability to fight back, and, and you see, you're not just born a fighter, you have to kind of learn these experiences, so it's, you have to do it, though, you have to be active, really.
I think in London, you know, it's not just a question of hanging around with all the people that agree with you, you know, once a week at a central London venue. It's about building up strong libertarian presence in every neighbourhood throughout London. And Radical London is a network of groups like Haringey Solidarity Group and, you know, Lewisham Community Action and so on, encouraging people to set up groups and be active on a community level. I think that's really the way forward.
Yeah, yep. And what are you up to now?
Well, that's basically it, really. Is you know, it's heavily involved in community struggles. Both me and Helen have been involved with the Haringey Alliance for Public Services, obviously Haringey Solidarity Group, friends groups, residents associations, different campaigns, freedom to protest issues. Having, you know, won this battle against McDonald's, we wanted to encourage other groups to stand up for their rights and freedoms that were won through struggles over generations. And the government is clearly on the offensive, trying to take away our rights and attack our conditions, all the things that we've won as a result of past struggles. So we have to be similarly determined and organised as the establishment are in defending our rights.
When do you think we lose the fight? When do you think...
We lose only if we don't fight back. You know, if you get involved in something, okay, sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. But the struggle is the victory. By getting involved, by fighting back, by distributing information, by, you know, building up your confidence and awareness, that is, in the long term, is the real victory. I mean, you can't win every battle, but you can build up a real counter power to those who are currently running our society. And eventually, if we build up ourselves to a point where people all over the world are trying to take over their neighbourhoods, their workplaces, and, you know, and speak for themselves and all that, we will have eventually enough power to do that and just take control.
Do you think that the real threat to a government is a strong community?
Yeah, I think there's two real areas where we can really challenge the power of the people fucking up our planet. That's in the community, in our neighbourhoods, by building up strong neighbourhood organisation and campaigning around issues to do with the community, and in workplaces, building up workplace organisation and challenging the bosses of, who run industry for their own ends. So let's get on with it.
A message to the Tory government, be afraid, be very afraid. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
And I'm going to do another show again with Dave Morris, focusing on like other issues and other things that you've been up to. Okay, thank you very much. To catch past shows, please go on www.thecircleday.com, and also don't forget to like the Facebook page, The Circle Day Facebook page. Till next week, turn on, tune in and kick off.
Of times, through the worst of times, through Nixon and through Bush. Do you remember 36? We went our separate ways. You fought for Stalin, I fought for freedom. You believe in authority, I believe in myself. I'm a Molotov cocktail, you're done pairing your baby. What's that confused look in your eyes? What I'm trying to say is that I burn down buildings while you sit on a shelf inside of them. You call the cops on the looters and pie throwers. They call it class war, I call it co-conspirators. 'Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal. We marched together for the 8-hour days and held hands in the streets of Seattle. But when it came time to throw bricks through that Starbucks window, you left me all alone. All alone. You watched in awe at the red, white and blue on the 4th of July. While those fireworks were exploding, I was burning that fucker and swinging my black flag high, eating the peanuts that the parties have tossed you. In the backseat of your father's new Ford, you believe in the ballot, you believe in reform. You have faith in the elephant and jackass, and to you solidarity's a four-letter word. We're all hypocrites, but you're a patriot. You thought I was only joking when I screamed kill Whitey at the top of my lungs, at the cops in their cars and the